This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, and welcome to it. It's Thursday. This part of the program brought to you by Consumers Mutual Insurance. Consumers Mutual, a bit different. It's the company that I sought out for my family and myself in all the confusion. I selected Consumers Mutual. They're different. They're a co-op, which means we have a stake in what goes on there. Find out more at consumersmutual.org. Life, death, and local news. We're going to talk about that more in a moment with my friend and colleague from years gone by, Melissa Prophet. We shared a news anchor desk together. We reported together. We were in a newsroom not unlike the one hit by tragedy yesterday by the deaths of these kids. 24-year-old Allison Parker, 27-year-old Adam Ward, gunned down, killed on live TV by an insane person. There's just no other way to put it. I'm not going to give him the best. Well, he was insane. He was an evil individual who wanted to start a race war. He claimed he was the target of people's ire because he was a gay black man, and therefore he was targeted. And they said, no, you're just not good at what you do, and you have anger issues. So we'll talk to Melissa about that later. Rick Ector's going to be here, the NRA credentialed firearms trainer, legally armed in Detroit. This is a story you want to hear. Changing hearts and minds, we'll talk about that. But here's something I thought we should talk about for a moment. You've heard, obviously, about Ashley Madison. You've heard about the Ashley Madison website and, life is short, have an affair. But remember, whenever you have an affair, you can get caught. And, of course, then the big hack came when hackers took all the information from tens of thousands of Ashley Madison users and began disseminating it across the internet and around the world for all to see. Michigan State University had nearly 700 accounts. The Michigan State Police had a couple there. In fact, Ashley Madison accounts were popping up in all sorts of places. Joe Biden's son Hunter appears to have had an Ashley Madison account. Of course, he denies it, but what are you expecting to do? Yeah, I was having an affair. It's me right here. Yeah, Ashley Madison. I mean, of course you're going to deny it. And Ashley Madison gave just enough plausible deniability because they don't require any proof of who you are when you sign up. So therefore, he can say, well, it wasn't me. Somebody else used my name and my, one of my emails. Okay, sure. I believe you. Yeah. Sure I do. Anyhow. Thousands of federal bureaucrats who accessed Ashley Madison's website for extramarital affairs may have done much more damage, though. May have opened the door for hackers, including those associated with foreign intelligence agencies, to gain access to sensitive government networks and U.S. secrets. That, according to cybersecurity experts looking at the problem. If even one federal official used a government computer or email to open a fake message from Ashley Madison that contained malware, a technique called spear phishing, all of the information stored in that government agency could be compromised. The biggest thing it opens up is spear phishing, says American Enterprise Institute Shane Tews. It makes it very hard for any sort of detection system. You're basically giving them permission to come into your computer. Hey, come on in. Further, he says, when you want to get into a system and you basically want to break and wreak havoc, all you need is one person dumb enough to open the email, he says. Well, one person dumb enough. Pardon me, but we are talking about the government. So it's no offense to you if you work for the government, but I'm not talking about you. you listen to this program. I'm talking about, you know the guy. Yeah, that's him. Yep, you're thinking of him, that guy. If he opens the email because he's having an affair and he's, you know, thinking not too clearly. One of the reasons it's so difficult to do cybersecurity is because it's almost always human error. Yeah. An estimated 15,000 federal or military officials use their government email addresses for their Ashley Madison accounts, according to the Federal Times. Several hundred paid using their government-owned computers. That, according to the Associated Press, hackers can use the information from the breach to determine who else in government to attack with malware and how and where. I would expect to see more spear phishing attacks, says Heritage Foundation Research Associate for Homeland Security and the cybersecurity expert himself, Riley Walters. Oh, yeah. So it's just an Ashley Madison account. No big deal, right? No big deal. Who can, you know, it's just me. I'm not hurting anybody. Well, you could be hurting us all, genius. Keep it in your pants. Government agencies, including the U.S. Office of Personnel Management and the U.S. Postal Service, both of which were breached last year, often don't train their employees to detect spear phishing, despite warnings from their inspectors general, the DCNF previously reported. It's the same thing you saw in the OPM and post office breaches, says Tews. Federal officials' decision to access Ashley Madison with government technology increases the risk that an employee would click on malware. That's also backed up by James Scott, a senior fellow at the Institute for Critical Infrastructure Technology. You see, this is why, by the way, I had this for an employee, not me. I had a former employee who was being considered for top secret clearance in the U.S. military, going to one of the academies. And a group descended upon my office to ask every one of us questions about this person, what they were like, how they behaved, any concerns, any affairs, any boyfriends, girlfriends, acquaintances, you know, did they sleep around the office? All of these things were asked. Because if you have, well, I guess if human beings have a weakness, it's sexuality oftentimes. And the weakness of sexuality would determine you were not allowed to get high-level clearance to government secrets, for example. But here you have Ashley Madison opening the door secretly. And computers opening the door secretly. Same problem as far as human weakness. But the line of defense has been breached because of all the secrecy and the way that technology works today. But the same people that be accessing Ashley Madison accounts would be denied clearance at the highest government levels. And for all the obvious reasons, there you have it. Now you understand. All right, it's 14 after the hour. American Metal Roofs bringing you this part of the hour, AmericanMetalRoofs.com. Log on, save 50%. Classes held monthly. All you have to do is sign up, sign on. AmericanMetalRoofs.com would be the last roof you ever buy. Tell them Steve Gruber sent you. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Thursday.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
It's Thursday, 18 after the hour. Life, death, and local news. Kind of has everybody's attention after two journalists were gunned down on live television from a small station in Virginia. Just about 24 hours ago it happened. 24-year-old Allison Parker was doing a story. She was the reporter at a marina about some new developments there. Adam Ward, the 27-year-old photographer, Virginia Tech grad. And along comes Vester Lee Flanagan, a former employee, a former colleague who went by the name Bryce Williams, who had been fired 2 years, 2.5 years earlier. Comes up and Well, basically executes these two on live television. You know, I spent 14 years as a news reporter, worked for ABC and NBC, worked in small stations in places like Bozeman, Montana. And my next guest, Melissa Prophet, and I worked together for years in Lansing, Michigan, a smaller station, if you will. Melissa, welcome to the program. Well, she'll be here in just a moment. Little technical glitch, no big deal. But Melissa and I worked together, and we did these live shots on everything you could imagine. You know, a lot of weather, obviously car accidents. I actually covered a school shooting once. And a whole lot of human interest stories. Stories that I consider to be, you know, fairly straightforward. But every now and then you'd end up in what you would consider hostile territory. You know, I did an in-depth report of the Klan in southern Ohio. And sometimes I wondered if I could, you know, punched. But I never really, you know, considered being shot, I guess. Melissa Prophet, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning, Steve. Thanks.
You know, you and I, you spent several years. I spent 14 years covering local markets. I was in Bozeman, Montana, Lansing, Michigan, which are, you know, pretty small markets overall compared to the big cities, of course. And I know you did your time in the salt mines. You know, working in smaller markets, and you get sent out on live shots on just about anything. Weather was a big one. Car accidents, just about anything you can imagine. This young lady yesterday was out doing a thing at a marina. Pretty straightforward human interest, almost a Chamber of Commerce type live shot. Basic, easy, fun. And it ends just so tragically. I mean, just tell me what your thoughts were when you first saw it.
I was pretty surprised when I heard it. I actually happened to be, you know, up fairly early yesterday, and so kind of caught it right as it was happening. And my first thought was, you know, that they were probably doing some kind of story that involved heated moments. It could have been racial. It could have been tension-filled. It could have been anything like that. So as the story played out throughout the day, I was really surprised that they were at such an innocuous story to begin with, and then to hear, of course, that it had something to do with someone that they worked with or that they knew, I think actually made me feel just a little bit better, because then it's not so random and it's not so scary, I think, for the rest of the reporters out there that they have to be looking over their shoulder constantly, even though you really do.
No, certainly. I think that you find yourself, I mean, think about this. You did this for years and years, as did I, and for those that you, just for a peek behind the curtain, if you will, you're out there on a live shot. Your producer, your news director, whoever said, go out and cover this story. You know, oftentimes it'll be either early in the morning like this one was or at the end of the day. And if it's not a heartbreaking news story, you get into a point where you're just kind of, you're going through it and you're checking the boxes and doing it properly, but you get focused. Okay, your photographer says you're on in 10, you're on in 5, go. You have tunnel vision of sorts. You're not looking left to right. You're not, you know, looking behind you to make sure you're protected. You're pretty vulnerable out there.
Right. I think for the most part, whenever I went out there, and if it was a heartbreaking news story, the photographer and I, or whoever else was out there with us, were always very aware of the situation when we first went out there, especially if we knew we were in a neighborhood that may not have the best reputation.
Sure.
But once you are out there, you know you have your work to do, and you have to get set up, and you have to go. So I think at that point, that's when you let your guard down. And people can come right up to you. I mean, they did. They would come right up to you and shake your hand. They would come right up to you and yell at you in your face. You had no bodyguard. You had no one around you that would stop them. You know, I have to say, from time to time, the photographers that I worked with were always very graceful and protective of especially the female reporters. But they're just, you know, a regular person too, and they're certainly not armed, and they're certainly not trained to take someone down in a situation where there could be danger. So, yeah, you're just out there working and hoping that the neighborhood or the folks around you where you're standing are happy that you're there.
Yeah, I'm hopeful today that we don't have, and unfortunately, I'm hopeful, but I'm concerned that there are some dark souls out there saying, you know, I wonder if I can kill people on live TV, and maybe I can get more next time, and that concerns me. The thing that really disgusted me, though, yesterday, and I'll give you a quick thought on this before we run, was the fact that several websites, and I think it's still out there today, are running this selfie snuff film, if you will, because this killer videotaped himself murdering these people, and it ended up on the internet, and it's all over the place. And I think anybody that runs that ought to be ashamed.
Yeah, I will agree with you 100%. In this day and age, with all of the video and the phones and everything that we have that can record something, we are recording too much. That just never should be on air or online or anywhere. And my heart goes out to their families, because that's just something that collectively, as a community, as a whole, as a nation, that we should put our foot down and say, no, we're not doing this. We have
Absolutely.
Too much respect and too much dignity for life to do this.
And I agree with you, and I think my point is exactly what you're saying. Have a little respect for the families. Have some respect. Have some decorum. And stop airing these videos. Melissa Prophet, I'm glad to have you on the program. Look forward to having you on more as a new regular contributor here when it comes to news-type stories. Melissa Prophet, everybody, veteran news reporter. She's been there, and she'll be here going forward. Melissa, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it, Melissa Prophet, on the Thursday edition of the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Happiness is a warm gun.
All right. It's Thursday. It's real. It might feel like a dream, but it's real. Steve Gruber with you on the Steve Gruber Show here today. You know, you may have heard a few weeks ago, a year ago, whatever it's been now, but it was Detroit Police Chief James Craig who came out and said, listen, we have limited resources. We have big parts of the city that, you know, only a few residents live in anymore. Some streets only have one or two or three houses that are occupied. We cannot dedicate all of our resources to these sparsely populated areas when we have other areas that have needs. So therefore, if you call the police, it could be a while. I'm sure you remember the ambulance response times were an hour in some places. Well, if you have to defend yourself, maybe you should step up and take it seriously. Rick Ector did. He is an NRA-certified firearms instructor and the blogger behind LegallyArmedInDetroit.com. And he says, well, business is booming. He joined us on the line. Rick Ector, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show. Great opportunity. Look forward to talking with you and your listening audience.
Well, you know, let's do a little bit of background here. In fairness and honesty, you know, for many years, there were a lot of, whether official or unofficial, prohibitions to black Americans getting firearms to defend themselves and their family. That, of course, has changed during the course of my lifetime. And as a result, I run into a large number of black Americans and others who had previously maybe not considered having a firearm, but now are going through the training classes like you provide at your academy, if you will, and feeling that they have the right, which they do, to defend themselves. Tell me about it. You say business is booming. Let's talk about how things are and how you got started down this road.
Oh, how I got started down that road, that's an interesting story in itself. Not too long ago, you know, it seems as though the older I get, the faster time flies, but about 11, 12 years ago, I was pretty much the typical guy, you know, corporate job, you know, decent home, living in a nice neighborhood, family guy. And I had heard a lot of information about the gun debate, pro and con. You know, and to me at that time, I wasn't pro-gun, but I wasn't anti-gun either. It was just a conversation that really didn't seem to matter to me or apply to me. There wasn't any perceived need. You know, it was one of those things that I had heard about. And recently, Michigan had went to a shall-issue process with regards to the granting of concealed carry licenses. And lo and behold, you know, the unthinkable actually occurred. Coming home late one evening, you know, towards the end of the year when it gets dark early, I was actually accosted and robbed at gunpoint in my own driveway.
So in your own driveway.
That was when I decided that if I survived this incident, you know, while it's actually occurring, then I would take on a more active role in my personal protection. And when you look at it from the historical context, since 1925, or actually 1927, when the Michigan Firearms Act went into effect in Michigan, you know, that was when a series of draconian gun laws went into effect, such as these 83 county gun boards, discretionary licensing, the outlawing of short-barreled shotguns, short-barreled rifles. It was really during this era that the city of Detroit was leading the nation in gun control, and it all was a result of Dr. Ossian Sweet, who defended his home against the Klan back in 1925. But from 27 all the way to 2001, you know, that was when we went to shall issue that people in predominantly black areas in the state, such as Detroit, were now actually going to have a realistic shot at getting a concealed carry license. And for many people in the area and in the region, you know, this whole gun ownership and carrying a firearm is still, you know, relatively new. You know, it's been very helpful that our latest police chief, James Craig, has actually come out in support of people carrying firearms for personal protection. And make no mistake about it, you know, we're on the same page when we say we want, you know, good people who can meet all the requirements and are prepared to be lawful, moral, legal, and responsible with their obligation, you know, to make sure that they are handling that responsibility appropriately.
But, well, you carry yourself.
It's a good thing to see. You know, more and more people are taking the chief up on his offer, on his request to become legally armed, as you still stated very eloquently a few minutes ago. You know, we have a challenging set of circumstances in the city financially. We're just coming out of bankruptcy. The city is huge, 144 square miles. The police can't get everywhere in a timely fashion. And it only makes common sense for people to take on
the
role in their personal protection.
There's the point. I think it makes common sense. And Rick, I wanted to jump in here. A couple of things you said. We're on the line with Rick Ector. He is an NRA certified and credentialed firearms trainer. A man who, as you heard, robbed at gunpoint his own driveway, who made a decision at that point. He was neither pro or anti-gun at that point in his life. Decided, you know what? I need to be more responsible with my own safety and that of my family. A couple of things. Number one, you mentioned the story of Dr. Ossian Sweet from 1925. It's a fabulous story, by the way, that you can find at the Michigan Historical Society there by the Capitol, the big museum. A fascinating story from 1925 of an accomplished black man and his family moved into a white neighborhood in the 20s and was, you know, routinely harassed, accosted, and finally, in a big incident, defended himself with firearms against a marauding white crowd. And he was acquitted of all charges, by the way. I don't believe he ever went to prison.
By an all-white jury in 1925.
Yeah, by an all-white jury in 1925. They said, you know what, the guy's defending his home. And that's okay. But after that, you're right, a lot of draconian laws came along. Something else here, I just have to comment before I forget here, Rick. And the only picture I have of you, first of all, yeah, you look like somebody I'd want on my flank if something was going down, because you look like you have it together. But I love the throwback Detroit Tigers jersey you have on in this picture I see of you. That's an awesome jersey,
yes,
dude.
Thanks.
Yeah. That's a Trammell Whitaker jersey.
Yeah,
I'm looking at that going, that's
it
fabulous.
It was a thing that I had going with some pictures that we were having made, and I had an idea that, you know, when you throw something on social media, anyone might see it, but... with that in mind, I wanted to have at least some images that they, you know, captured the spirit and embodied the spirit of the city of Detroit. And a great day in Detroit was when, of course, our beloved Tigers won the World Series in 84. So I had to put the jersey on.
Well, and I appreciate that. I understand you were at last night's game as well, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I need you to hold the line there. We'll ask you about last night's game, but I want to talk to you about the people that you're seeing come through, because over the last couple of years, something on the order of nearly 2,000 people have become legally licensed handgun carriers concealed in Detroit, which, let's be honest, it's going to make a difference for people's safety. So hold the line if you could, Rick, and we'll
Absolutely.
Get right back into this conversation. We're on the line with Rick Ector. Fascinating conversation. National Rifle Association. Association credentialed firearms trainer, who said, listen, I'm not going to be a victim in my own driveway or my own city. I'm going to be proactive. Love the spirit. Love the American spirit. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show on this Thursday. We're on with Rick Echter, National Rifle Association credentialed firearms trainer in the city of Detroit. You can check out his website, Legally Armed in Detroit. You'll find the shirts, they're pretty cute. You'll like them. I do. I'm going to have to order myself one today, actually. Rick, well, first of all, a little fun stuff. Were you at the game last night?
Yeah, we were at the game last night, and it was really an exciting time, man, because not only does it seem that JV's got his mojo back, man, but he had a great shot at throwing a no-hitter last night, and it went all the way into the ninth inning, and his first batter in the ninth, he gave up a double, but retired the side, but... you know, it's good to see him get his form back. The Tigers won, and more importantly, he pitched a complete game. You know, that bullpen is unpredictable of late.
Yeah, that's a nice, polite way to put it, unpredictable, Rick. I've heard people use other adjectives describing the bullpen this year, but fair enough. Okay, so let's go back to focus on your evolution, I guess, from a non-gun owner to a gun owner to an NRA instructor and instructing. Tell me about the people that show up in your classes. What kind of folks are you seeing? Young, old, men, women? What are you seeing?
Well, there's a nice mixture, diversity of people who I'm training these days. But before, like when I first started training, maybe 10 years ago, it was predominantly a male clientele, male students coming into the course. But with the transition of time, the ratio of men and women has radically changed. Predominantly more women are attending. In most classes, women are at least in the majority of the classes that I'm teaching now. And there's now a pronounced increase in the number of senior citizens who are actually taking the classes. And I really attribute that to a lot of the things that we're seeing in the local news media with regards to the types of crimes that we're seeing. Generally now, we're seeing bold criminals who are attacking primarily women and senior citizens. And the thing that's really got women on edge, and rightly so these days, is that there's this roving gang of thugs, of 4 to 6 of them, they believe, who are actually raping women while holding the husband slash boyfriend significant other at gunpoint and forcing them to watch. So got a lot of people on the edge, and just the boldness of these folks that are out here.
Well, sure, and I think you make a great point.
And
I think you make a great point that women are taking up a lot of these spots. And my wife just became certified has got her CPL here a couple of months ago. And you know, people don't look to the 5'3" lady on the side to be the one to take you out. But be careful, boys and girls, because these ladies are packing heat. A lot of them. Now, let me ask you about this. I'm going to get into politics a little bit with you here, Rick, just because this tragic shooting yesterday, and we see this all too often of tragic shootings. However, it's the reaction from politicians on the left that always bothers me, because before yesterday's incident in Virginia had even, we even knew much about it. I'm hearing like the Democratic liberal governor of Virginia calling, well, people just don't need guns. You know, we just need to get rid of all guns. And it makes me wonder, in your case, what you think about these politicians on the left always calling for more gun control, to eliminate handguns, to eliminate all sorts of things. What is your reaction?
My reaction is it's fairly typical and it's standard. It's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, it really doesn't involve any type of serious thought about the issue at hand. You know, there's a lot of root causes in play in this particular case, at least from the preliminary reports I've seen. You know, this was a troubled individual. He had some issues, had been a problem for some time. And the thing that strikes me most starkly is that he apparently waited a number of years before deciding to exact his sick revenge against former coworkers. But, you know, evil exists. And no matter what we do or what we can legislate or come up with, there will always be someone with either evil in their heart or something's going on upstairs that someone knew about and no one, you know, addressed, no one made it a point to say, okay, this person is obviously a ticking time bomb. We need to do something about it. A thing that I firmly and staunchly believe is that the best that we can do with regards to evil people, man, is you know, be vigilant, be aware, and when it occurs, you know, have some people there or at least allow people to have the right or the ability to defend themselves so when it does occur, they have an opportunity to stop it with as least amount of loss of life as possible. But bad guys, criminals, deranged people, they do what they do, and they're going to, when there's a will, they'll find a way. Disarming other people who didn't do it is not the answer.
I want to ask you, you said you were, so it's been, what, 10 or 12 years now since you were robbed in your own driveway and you had a an epiphany standing there, I suppose, thinking and saying to yourself, if I survive this, it won't happen again. Have you ever been approached and been threatened since that time, since you became a legal gun owner?
You know, one of the great things about the training, though, is that it really heightens your need to be aware of a lot of things that are going on, not only actually seeing what's around you, but just recognizing variables that may be present. You know, there's three things for a crime that could be committed. You need someone with criminal intent, the ability and the opportunity. You know, the art of avoidance comes into play. Don't put yourself into a bad situation. You know, make good decisions. Obviously carry a firearm, but awareness, situational awareness, and just being aware. And one of the things of the video, and I'll confess, I was one of the people who actually went out and jumped on the internet and looked for the actual footage of the shooting that the bad guy had when he was wearing his, I guess, a GoPro camera or something. But the thing that escaped, that could not escape me, was this guy was hovering around in the area, you know, within arm's length for a good while, and they never saw him coming, you know. He was there.
Didn't pay attention.
And it seemed like he was vacillating whether he was actually going to go through with this heinous act, but, you know, eventually
unfortunately,
he
did, Rick. Rick Hector, I have to leave it there, which I'm not pleased about. Rick Hector, you are a shining example of what is right with Michigan and what is right with America, my friend. I greatly appreciate you having the time to be on the program. Would love to have you again sometime soon.